Good time of day, and welcome back to episode 12 of the Gradient Podcast. I'm one third of your host, Armon.
I'm Jaden.
And I am Evan.
And today, we are going to talk about streetwear. More specifically, how designer brands have shaped popular culture for both the famous influencers and the typical consumer.
Now, before this episode starts, you know, when this episode does eventually come out, it will be the holiday season, so we just want to, you know, give a quick thanks and to watching us, and also say that we hope you had a great time, you know, with your family. Happy Christmas, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays to whatever you celebrate. We're so glad you came back to us, and we hope you had a wonderful time.
Yeah, Hanukkah's the best. Don't at me.
Very I mean, wonderful.
You could definitely at him if you really wanted to. I won't stop you.
Don't.
In no, the please, comment section below, remember to at Evan right now. And please. As we begin, I think we need to highlight some of the more influential brands when we talk about designer streetwear, and that's more of the Supreme, the Off-White, the Bape, the Billionaire Boys Club, and other brands of that sort.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, Bape is Bathing Ape, right?
Yeah, it's the one that Pete Davidson wore on SNL in that brief Weekend Update skit.
Yeah, yeah, that's how I recognize it from. I'm going to come out and say it. I'm really not too familiar with streetwear and like the trends and whatnot. So I recognize like Supreme because of just how big Supreme is and was, you know, especially back in like 2016, 2017. It was huge back then. Still pretty big now, but definitely like huge back then. And I recognized Bape or Bathing Ape from Pete Davidson. And that was pretty much the extent of it. So, you know, I'm not too familiar with like, you know, like these like streetwear trends, you know, the hot new items that, you know, for clothes and for clothing and whatnot. Not too familiar with it. I'll just come out and say that now.
So Bape is like it's like the over the front zip up hoodie with like the shark face on the front, right?
Yeah, that's one of their more iconic sort of outfits per se. And I think the main appeal to this, besides some of the more iconic looks, is the mere fact that these brands have such an impactful logo and branding that they can literally slap that logo on anything. They take very cheap, like $10, $15 shirts, put their logo on it, and able to sell it for so much money, it's ridiculous. And people buy in, and there's whole crazes and trends about these sort of very basic items that just have the designer logo on it.
I mean, hold on, we can all agree, though, that, like, you know, the entire, like, zip-over hoodie, you know, the shark face, We all know where that came from. It was obviously the Minecraft Creeper hoodie that all your friends were rocking in third grade. And I mean, that's just where it started, right? We can all agree that, you know, respect where respect's due.
Yeah, you know, Bathing Ape's got to, you know, they got to respect the OG. The Creeper hoodie, the OG.
The origins of Bape came strictly from the Minecraft Creeper zip-up hoodie. Is that where this take is going?
It's not a take, I would just say that's fact.
Yeah. It's just the truth, yeah, this is just the truth.
As you can likely infer that the other two members of the Gradient Podcast aren't too indulged in the coined hypebeast culture, the people that wear the Supreme and whatnot, and I partake in that to an extent, but not to some of the more extreme levels that we will touch on later in the podcast.
I would say note the full send sign he has in the background. Like, when he says that, just think about the sign. Just think about it.
Think about yeah, this
every time he mentions to an extent, just imagine in your head the full send sign in his background.
But yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to agree with Armon here. You know, he is, I would say, the more experienced. He stepped his foot into the pool that is hypebeast culture more than Evan and Armon have, or Evan and I have. And I think that's for the reason that I'm going to, again, say it now, that I am very disconnected from that kind of stuff, where I do not understand the value of putting a logo on something and having such a high markup. Like, it makes no sense to me.
And I think an interesting dynamic can come from this, because coming from someone who's sort of stepped their grounds into the hypebeast culture to an extent, Evan, but it poses very interesting questions, because I sort of see the appeal of these sort of high-end brands or high-end putting their logo on generic clothing. And we'll go into that a little bit later, but I want to say that it can pose some interesting questions that I'm going to sort of ask these two, coming from people who aren't very invested in this, in the culture or the more the pop culture society that reps these Supreme and Bape and Billionaire Boys Club and Off-White. And I think when we bring about these questions throughout the remainder of the podcast, having these two on will be a very interesting take on the operations of these brands.
And, you know, if you think of it like a gradient, if you see what I did there, you know, you have on one end of the spectrum, you have Armand.
Oh, I see what you did there, because our name is gradient. Yeah.
See, Armand's smart. So if you look at it, right, we have, you know, one of the spectrum being Armand, who, you know, is involved in the hypebeast culture.
To an extent.
Yeah, sure. Full stand, whatever.
Bring up the Yeezys, have, come on.
Yeah, the, you know, it's fake Yeezys. And then...
I wore fake Yeezys, ironically, just because it was fake and to be humorous.
Yeah, he says that. Humor is so funny. Crying when he got them. And then, you know, you have Jaden, who on the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, sees clothes as clothes and nothing else, you know, just a means by which you comfort yourself when it's cold. But, you know, for me, I don't necessarily follow trends, like the hypebeast trends or whatever, your Bapes, your Bathing Apes. No, that's the same thing. Your Bathing Apes, your Supremes, your Thrashers, your whatnot. You know, I've heard of them. I've seen them, you know, on the street. I guess that's why they call it streetwear. I've seen them around, but I'm not invested in that. For me, I see clothes as an expression of my personal taste, and so that's why, you know, for some of the more keen observers of the podcast, you may have noticed that I literally only wear band t-shirts. The only t-shirts I wear are shirts from that have like the logos and stuff of bands that I like. Fender kind of counts. It's a guitar company, so I count it as a band shirt. You can disagree with me in the comments. I don't care. But for me, I like to express myself with my clothing. I don't necessarily follow the trends, but I do like to engage in a sort of clothing culture, not necessarily apropos to streetwear or hypebeast culture or whatnot, but definitely something along those lines. So I think that kind of puts me in the middle in this, I guess you could say, discourse. And so I think that would be could be, you know, interesting to look at when we debate further on the episode.
No, but I mean, I'm gonna agree with everything that, you know, Evan said there, where I don't think, you know, the gap between Evan and I is that far, because I'm a firm believer that, you know, you can express yourself in, you know, the clothes that you wear, right? And, you know, your clothing gives you some sort of uniqueness and can also give you an identity. But where I kind of stray from this whole, you know, designer clothing is, if you want to, you know, if you wear clothes for the sole reason of being unique, expressing yourself, having an identity, what identity do you get from wearing the same clothes that everyone else is wearing because they think it makes them, like, cool, it makes them unique?
And I do totally agree with this, even being someone who has partaken in the sort of hypebeast culture in the past, and to some extent right now. But I very much respect the idea that not necessarily wearing clothes just to wear clothes, because we've just established that we wear clothes to build an identity, but the fact that you guys haven't hopped on these trends of wearing Supreme and wearing Bape and wearing Billionaire Boys Club and other hypebeast brands, because like the reason, the appeal behind these brands are simply to fit into a culture that has worn these brands, to sort of popularize yourself with these people. And the fact that you guys haven't partaken in this sort of shows a unique identity and a unique establishment. And that is something that I very highly respect. And I don't want to say jealous of or like envious of, but it is something that a lot of people are, because a lot of people see the need of wearing these type of clothes just to fit into a world of other people who do wear these clothes. And I think it also goes into the appeal of these hypebeast brands entirely. It's because people wear Supreme and other hypebeast brands because famous influencers and other people around them wear these brands. It gives them sort of a means to fit in. We come from a society that is so intrinsically needy to fit into a group of people, to have a classification of a group of some sort, that they wear these brands that the majority of people wear for that sole reason. And the fact that there are people able to stick out are these people that have the unique identity to the fullest extent. And that is something that is very, very awesome.
So something I want to touch on that Armand kind of mentioned earlier, but wasn't entirely accurate, is the pricing of the production of the goods. Let's take, for example, Supreme, right? Armand talked about how you take a $10 to $15 t-shirt, you slap a stamp on it, boom, you're selling it for like $150. That is kind of accurate, but it's actually even more drastic than that. Because if you think about it from like a wholesale production, a t-shirt isn't going to cost you $10, $15 if you're if you're wholesale producing it, it's gonna run you maybe about like $2 at most. You slap a stamp on that, 10 cents, maybe 15 cents. You know, you at most $2.15 maybe per shirt, slap $150. Those margins are absolutely insane. Like, those are something that that you can only dream of as a business owner. So I think that's what really sets these brands apart, more than just, you know, like the popularity of them, more than just, you know, how like the influence, social media influence of them, but just how financially successful they can be from, you know, taking so little money needed to produce the product to so much money being made in revenue. And that's really what impresses me, you know, someone who is business minded, I guess you could say. That's what, you know, really encapsulates me when it comes to the streetwear brands and whatnot.
And what's really funny to me, actually, is, like, you have people who are going to be like, oh, you don't have the authentic, you know, Supreme shirt. That's a fake Supreme shirt. Well, it's funny to me because, what, an authentic person didn't slap the sticker on? The sticker isn't authentic? There's a different type of sticker? Like, when you look at it, like, at the smallest possible level, what they do is so simple and you're paying so much money for it that, like, to say that, oh, you don't have the authentic one, oh no, your sticker is slightly smaller. Like, why does that stuff matter?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny you mentioned that because my brother bought a pack, it was like a 50 pack of fake Supreme stickers for like $3. And he would just slap Supreme stickers on things, you know? Yeah, like Armand has one. I'm not sure if that's fake or not.
So, yeah, I have no idea if it's fake or not. But I want to bring back to a point that Evan and Jaden just made just minutes ago, where Evan specifically talked about the drastic financial sort of savvy that Supreme has, where they're able to make something for so cheap and benefit financially so much from selling it for such a high price. They've taken that notion and exercise and exponentially increased it. They literally slap a Supreme logo on everything. They're making Supreme toothbrushes, Supreme bikes, Supreme shower caps. And now to touch back on what Jaden said, as critical as of we are of people wearing these brands, you have to give it up for these brands being able to have such an impact and influence. As critical as, like, laughable as we are, like, Supreme, come on. They're literally just putting their logo on any clothing or any item. The amount of advantages they've able to sort of have from just doing that, the amount of power they're able to have and influence on pop culture and everyday society is just incredible. And I think as much as we're like making fun of them, we have to give it up for them. They're able to do so much with just a red box that says one word.
And it's funny that you mentioned that because, you know, I'm sure if you've been on the internet long enough and you've seen enough ads, you've probably come across that Squarespace ad where it talked about, you know, steps to making a cult skater brand, and it was like step one, make a logo like that you can put on everything. Step two, put it on everything. Boom, you're done. And that's basically what they're doing. You know, they have this logo, you know, that, you know, I guess is nice. You know, I think it's an okay logo at best, in my opinion, honestly. Maybe a hot take.
It's all right.
You can come at me if you want to.
Radiant has a better logo.
Yeah, that's just objective. We have a better logo.
It's not a subjective opinion. It's a fact.
That's just the truth. But, you know, they're taking these Supreme logos and they're putting it on basically anything you can find in a Walmart. You know, take a cookie, put a Supreme logo on there, boom, it is the most expensive cookie you can find in the entire world.
They have Supreme Oreos.
Really?
Honestly, I was at a sneaker fest a couple of days ago because I was helping a family member sell some of the old shoes that they have, and there were people with like Oreo packets that were branded with Supreme, and
this is my point exactly, where you can put Supreme logo on basically anything and then sell it for like a 300% uptick. It's almost like post parody where you can just basically do anything you want.
But wait,
the people behind it are genius.
Wait, hold on, are those the fake Supreme Oreos? Bro, give me a break.
Like Chips Ahoy Supreme Oreos.
Oh my god.
I think the fundamental question that remains when talking about the influence and power that Supreme or any other hypebeast brands has on pop culture is, how did that influence and power arise? What outside factors made Supreme so powerful? Because I feel like if we put the Gradient logo, as incredible of a logo as it is, on any given item, it wouldn't sell nearly as much as Supreme is. It wouldn't be nearly as profitable.
You've got to credit it all to, like, you know, the celebrities and, you know, quote-unquote influencers who wear these type of, you know, clothes and wear the kind of apparel that has these logos on it. Because as far back as you can go into history, you know, people want to be like the people who are rich and the people who are famous and be like them. Where a lot of people are just going to start copying what they're doing. And if they're wearing these, you know, sticker on a white t-shirt type of clothes, then you're going to see people do the same. And I think that's really what happened with these brands, where maybe a couple people started picking it up, and then, you know, it eventually got to the celebrities, and then the fans of these celebrities are like, man, I sure want to be cool like this guy.
I think it's time for my very infamous line. We live in a society, and this society is so intrinsically needy of fitting in and being part of a community that I've mentioned this before, but I think I need to stress it again. When we have these hype-beast brands that are so classified with a certain group of influencers and a super certain group of people, if people are more like able to wear these kinds of brands, they fit in better per se. And it's sort of this ideology that if you wear the brands that other people wear and that these famous influencers and celebrities wear, you're intrinsically part of this group, this community. And I think it's human nature that people want, like, community. People want a group to fit in with, right? And I feel like a common, like, topic we've established in this podcast is that the people who hop on these trends lack a sort of uniqueness and a sort of savvy in terms of, like, finance and business and whatnot and identity. But there are people who have, like, been a part of this trend and benefit from it. There's a lot of people who've established themselves as an identity of, like, Supreme or other hype-beast brands. And I think a very, like, notable person of this is Supreme Patty, the rapper who's built his whole brand and, like, career on the mere fact that he's so indulged in the hype-beast community. And on a less extreme example, you have a bunch of these people who are retailers of high-end stuff, people who sell Supreme, people who sell Jordan 1s and other, like, shoe wears and hype-beast shoes.
I mean, you can't get mad at people for, you know, seizing an opportunity to, like, you know, get that, like, claim to fame. Like, that's not something you can be upset about. But I think one thing that you're gonna want to question is, like, why is the mechanism of, you know, these famous clothing making these hype beasts be able to reach that level? Like, why, what power and why does the clothing have these power to enable these people to, you know, exist in the first place?
I think it's less of the impact of the brand and more of the fact that these people know to, instead of buy into the trend, they buy, or not buy into, but they benefit from the trend to profit from the trend instead of buying into the trend. And I think that remains true whether it be anything, whether it be hype-beast brands or whether it be technology or anything that's a modern trend in terms of how the world develops, right?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think there's ever going to be, like, a clear answer as to, you know, why these brands are as popular as they are. You know, you could talk ad nauseum as to why Supreme, you know, doesn't deserve the popularity that it has, but there's, like, and there's never going to be a clear answer as to.
I don't think the brand itself is so incredibly high status and amazing, but I think the fact that the people behind it are so business savvy to make it so powerful and have so many influencers represent their brand makes it not necessarily, like, worth it, but make them deserving of the high status and high power that they have.
But, you know, what I was saying, though, is, like, you could debate for days as to, you know, why are they popular? You know, what factors led to their popularity? I'm sure there's, you know, a billion things that cost Supreme and these other, you know, we keep saying Supreme, but there's plenty of other, you know, similar brands out there.
Let's only refer to Bape when we talk about hype-beast brands now.
Yeah, just Bape.
Give them some clout.
Yeah. you know, and you know, the Billionaire Boys Club, whatever they're called. I don't know much about it. I'm just kind of, like, regurgitating what her mom was saying earlier. But, you know, we could talk, you know, forever about, you know, what caused these brands to be popular, but I don't ever think there's going to be a clear answer. You know, there's never going to be, like, a finite reason as to why, you know, Bape is as popular as it is. Which kind of, you know, but it's very, you know, seeing these companies, these brands adapt to their popularity, you know, having, you know, famous influencers and whatnot use the popularity of the brands to increase both their popularity as well as popularity of the brands, you know, even more, almost kind of like cyclical relationship where, know, as one increases, the other increases, and it keeps going up and up and up. And so eventually one of them will decrease. That's just how the market works. But I mean, you know, it's a very, you know, complicated and complex issue, and I don't think that there will ever be like a clear answer to that question.
Again, I'm gonna have to completely agree with you. I don't think there's going to be an answer, you know, to how did these brands rise up, but the continuation of these brands, I think there's, you know, a clear answer to why that is true, because, you know, as you get down to it, what these brands are selling isn't, you know, the actual clothing, it's kind of their identity, right? It's the same, you know, with, it's still streetwear, it's the same with, you know, a company like Apple, where they are selling, you know, these products that, you know, have these, like, minor increases the further you go up and, you know, how new they are, but the price gap between each one is extremely high, right? And at that point, you come to the realization that what they're selling isn't really the features, they're selling the identity of the brand, they're selling the logo of the brand, because that is what's worth money.
Yeah, the it's important to understand, like, the value that we put on these like products does not come from the quality of the clothing or whatnot. You know, we know the common example of how monkey have banana have value, you know, monkey grow more bananas, banana less value. Classic example. Classic. Everyone knows that.
But, he's been waiting to say that.
Yeah. But you know, as much as bananas have value, the value that comes, the value that we put into these, into the streetwear clothing, does not come from, you know, how nice the shirt feels, or, you know, how much it, like, conducts air around you or whatever, you know, like the air resistance of the shirt. Although that'd be pretty interesting. I'm sure they feel fine. I don't really plan on wearing one in the future. But it's important to realize that, you know, the reason that they can cost so much is despite costing so little to produce on the company side, is because of the popularity of them. So the value comes from that, you know, that perceived popularity.
Exactly.
Like clout, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, exactly. It's now not just monkey have banana, banana has value. It's monkey have banana, monkey slap banana on everything. Now everything has value.
I think this discourse is slowly transitioning into the new point. And to begin this point, I want to establish that I think more with us three, that we have the sort of analytical business mind where we can see the business savvy and profitable benefit or
I'm
advantage
for the consumer.
That these brand, wait, repeat that?
I'm for the consumer. Don't get it confused.
For the consumer. And I think we can very, very well acknowledge that these brands have done something right, whether it be to sell their identity rather than the product itself, because that's moreover the thing that costs the most money. Because again, to reiterate the last point, you're not selling a cheap $15 t-shirt or even less, as has been brought up. You're selling the fact that you're wearing Supreme. And to touch up on more of the business savvy mindset of the hypebeast community and Bape, not Supreme, I think we need to go more into the shoe game rather than just designer clothing, how these shoes have become profitable assets. A lot of people are buying into, and I want to go back to the shoe I bought. I bought these for $200. I'm sitting on them. They're reaching $300, $400 now. And I think that goes to that. That's strictly the extent to where I partake now into the hypebeast culture. And I think it has to be acknowledged that as much as we're touching on the fact that these trends exist to benefit the businesses and harm the consumer because they're buying into cheap clothing for a subjective identity, where a lot of people are benefiting financially from these trends more in the shoe game rather than designer clothing again.
You know, I'm all for buying clothes and buying shoes specifically that look cool because they look cool to you, not because, you know, someone else says they're cool. Because, you know, again, what we live in is, so if someone else, you know, someone who has that authority says it's cool, well, not only is the shoe cool to them, but the price tag is also going to rise because of them, right? Where if you really want to buy cool shoes, like, nothing should stop you, but it doesn't make any sense to me why someone is going to pay, you know, $500 for a pair of sneakers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, not to get too tangential, but to respond to what our mom was saying about, you know, he bought the shoes for $200 and he's watching them rise. You could almost think of it as like an asset, or you're investing in, and you're purchasing an asset, and then you're hoping that you can get a market capitalization from that asset. You know, not to get even more tangential, but when you look, if you talk about like a stock portfolio, they always talk about how you want to diversify your portfolio so that, you know, if one thing, you know, doesn't do as well, you know, other things, you know, will take its place, and you will be, and you'll be, you know, not as much as in risk. And we're starting to see a lot more collectibles being put in a portfolio. You know, before it was just stocks, bonds, mutual funds, but now we're seeing, and I guess real estate as well, but now we're seeing collectibles like shoes, like Pokemon cards have drastically risen, like out of nowhere. You know, when I was a kid, I watched Pokemon unboxing videos because, you know, I played the game.
Of course.
You know, I like trading cards, you know, but now we're seeing these, you know, these like just influencers, just like your Logan, Jake Pauls, your Ludwigs, and your Moist Criticals, just out of nowhere, opening hundreds and hundreds of boxes, and they're making money because these collectibles are consistently rising in value. So my advice, buy Pokemon cards. Not actually. But, you know, we do see, you know, these can be treated as assets, similar to a stock share. Similar to like a company stock or their shares. These are assets. These can be put in a portfolio, and, you know, recognizing the value and the volatility of these assets, similar to like a stock, it's gonna be really important when we're gonna see more and more people trying to basically become brokers, not necessarily, or like day traders of these kinds of assets, quote unquote.
I want to build off that last topic. I think the clear takeaway that Evan's like very, very well vividly described in this is that you need to know, or you need to have the sort of discerning mentality to understand when to buy into the trend and when to actually financially prosper from trends, whether they be Pokemon cards or whether they be designer sneakers and stuff like that. And I think these sort of trends and hype beast culture is really teaching a lot more people about business and how to benefit from consumer wants and make a living out of such things. And I think we're going to see a generation that is very, very business savvy. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to the people who have the capacity, the intellectual capacity to benefit off of these trends.
Well, that's not to say that, you know, shoes are just stocks that you can increase. I don't think that, you know, whether or not we do get more business savvy, you can really attribute that to shoes, because the people that are
I think a factor has to do with shoes.
I think there could be a small part, but, you know, the people that are making money off of shoes and are, like, using shoes as, quote-unquote, investments, there's not a large amount of people that are actually doing that, right? It's a very small percentage of people that I would say are, you know, making...
Be surprised.
You would be surprised.
But
not just shoes. Again, Pokemon cards, sports cards, trading cards, memorabilia.
I mean, I do think that there are those people, but... Compared to, like, if we all have shoes, right? A lot of people have Pokemon cards. And of those people that have, you know, those things, the amount of people that are doing such things for profit and they can actually successfully make a profit is so small that it's not really a good example of, you know, becoming business savvy.
I would have to disagree. There's
a lesson out of this in every instance where you buy into these sort of things and you see later on that if you buy in an item, if monkey buy banana,
but a monkey buy banana,
and value of banana goes up, the monkey can trade banana for more banana. If monkey choose not to sell banana, lesson gets learned. Where in the future, if monkey comes across banana that has high value, monkey can later web.
Technology is going way too far. This is getting off the rails. But, you know, to give, you know, kind of another tangent, because I love some tangents. I have been playing the card game Magic the Gathering for about 3 years now. And there is a surprisingly large and profitable secondary market where people will buy cards that are being, you know, used in competitive play. And because they're being used in competitive play, they have an increased value. More people want them. And they're, you know, they're buying cards and they're selling cards, and people... There's a whole subreddit called MTG Finance where people are speculating on which cards might increase in value. It's literally just stocks, but for a card game.
Beginner stock.
Yeah, and I could write a whole thesis about the parallels between, you know, the Magic the Gathering secondary market and the stock market. I think it's an incredibly interesting topic. Like I could do a whole episode by myself about it. Honestly, I would love to.
I want to rebut Jaden's point where he talks about that a lot of people aren't buying or like missing the opportunity to sell the banana or in this case any of their profitable assets. I think even if they do miss the opportunity, what I was trying to say, I don't think it was super concise, but if you miss the opportunity, you learn a lesson. I just got a direct message. You learn a lesson in the future to do so too. Don't miss the opportunity and benefit off of your asset. And I think that's where I was going, where people in the future will become more business savvy, whether that be they've taken advantage of the trends or they learn from the lack of taking advantage to in the future, whether it be in the stock or like a stock market or any sort of market they partake in the future.
Just to finish what I was saying before, with a market as niche as the Magic the Gathering market, there is still a lot of profit to be made because a lot of people are buying, a lot of people are selling. You know, even though it's a very small and niche community and secondary market, just because of the intrinsic nature of a market, there are means by which you can capitalize on your investments. And so even if there are only a couple dozen people buying and selling shoes like as assets, there is still money to be made even if it's a small market.
Again, like, that's something I can 100% agree with, that, you know, there is a way to make money out of these things. There's a way to, you know, learn business and profit out of these things. But I guess my argument really was, you know, yes, it's possible, but to the amount of people that may own these products, how many of them are actually in it to make a profit out of these products rather than, you know, like we said before, buying these products because it makes them feel special?
Let me tell you. So I spoke briefly earlier that I went to a sneaker fest where I helped sell shoes, right? I kid you not, there was about, you guys know how these marketplaces work. A lot of people set up shop there where they have their tables and they have a bunch of their shoes or designer clothing, and people come up to them and I'll give you $300 for it. No, I'll pay this, right? And they do the whole negotiation. More often than not, people came to these stands to sell and make a profit out of their stuff rather than to buy stuff from these stands. And I think more specifically with the shoe game and the designer clothing, people are very knowledgeable about the investment that they're going into when buying shoes or buying designer clothing because of the mere fact that it can make them money. People who do invest in shoes or designer clothing know that they're putting in a lot of money and they know that they can make a lot of money. Mm. And I think the example I gave sort of shows that.
Yeah, I think the misconception that Jenny might be having is that these people aren't like buying a pair of shoes that they want to wear and then eventually selling them off because it increased in value. These people are buying shoes that they expect to increase in value for the purpose of capitalizing. These people aren't just like, oh, you know, those are nice pair of shoes, I want to buy those, and then, you know, maybe sell them later for an uptick. These people are buying shoes for the purpose of resale value. And so, you know, that's what you got to understand, is that it's not just like, you know, people buying shoes willy-nilly and eventually selling them off. It's a market where people are investing and they're speculating and they're, you know, they're buying assets for the purpose of selling those assets later on for capitalization. So I think that's kind of like the misconception that Jane might be having here.
I think another prime example of this where people buy into stuff not because of using it, but to profit off of it later. Have you guys played the video game Madden?
No, we've been over this.
Yeah. My brother does. He actually just bought 21.
Right, so I played 20 for a while, and there's this feature in the game where people have a market where they sell cards and you can bid on them or you can like directly purchase. It's like eBay, but with like different players in the game where you can get and like benefit all of them. A lot of people take the investment of going in to buy packs where you get random cards, where you can go on into putting them into this marketplace where you can sell and benefit off your cards. A lot of people do that, and it really teaches them a lot about about like putting things in to gain money rather than just using them for the purpose of benefiting in the game, but to have means to benefit later in the terms of the money, right?
You know, interestingly that you bring that up, because EA, the company that makes Madden, also FIFA, and the other sports games that have, you know, the ultimate team feature that you're talking about, is being sued because of it. EA has had a class action lawsuit filed against them because of, this is a complete tangent once again, But because of the Ultimate Team, how you must buy packs, with the in-game currency, that's gambling effectively. And so they're being sued because in order to play the game how it's designed, you must gamble, which is bordering on illegal. So they're a class action
in all EA games, whether it be like Madden or 2K.
Well, 2K isn't EA. But that's why EA as a company is being sued for this feature in basically all the games that it's present in. So you know, your FIFA's, your Madden, the other one that no one plays.
NHL.
NHL. Right.
I think regardless of like, despite the tangent of the fact that they're doing that, it does have an effective marketplace where people have assets and they can benefit off of them, or they can use them to benefit like directly into the game. And the parallelisms between the Madden market or the FIFA market and like the hypebeast brands and designer shoes, and again with the stock market and secondary markets are remarkable. There are so many similarities and like subtle things where you have like any given shoe or any given stock or any given card, which is worth so little now, can go up so much. People expect it and people learn the skill of having to do it or how to know whether something will go up or something will benefit. And there's a whole knowledge of this, and it's so important to learn. And it's a lot of things that people have been learning by partaking in playing Madden or participating in shoes. And it's going to give them this business savvy to be successful in stocks later on in their life.
Like I said, you know, I agree with everything that you both just said, but I still don't think it, you know, really discredits my argument, because my argument isn't that, you know, it's not possible to make a profit and that these things aren't like stocks. It's that of everyone who owns these products, everyone who owns an EA game, owns designer clothes, owns, like, Pokemon cards, you know, your example of, you know, the convention, I think it's fair enough to say that the people who are going to these sneaker conventions are looking to buy expensive sneakers, right? Whether they want to keep them for themselves, you would say that a good portion of them are there to also sell their sneakers, because that is a far majority. Exactly, yeah. Like, that is a venue built, I want to say, for that kind of purpose, right? That's where people would go. But, again, people can make a profit, and it is kind of an early, you know, introduction to investment, which 100% I can agree with that.
From streetwear to apparel to so much more, we'd now like to honor Ishan Atawala for joining us on the Gradient podcast to speak about the hypebeast culture and many of the notions surrounding the shoe business.
Armand said it all. Let's check it out.
Joining us today, we have a 19-year-old entrepreneur, retailer who sold over $230,000 in shoes in 2020 alone, and man surprisingly afraid of cats, Ishan Atawala. Thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure, bro. I appreciate the invite, guys.
Of course. Now, our previous points in this episode, we spoke about hypebeast culture and how that's impacting teens today. Can you give us your thoughts?
In regard to hypebeast and what it impacts people, I feel like there's a huge impact in like numerous ways. A quick example, Hot Topic, Travis Scott. If Travis Scott wears a certain shoe and people see on his Instagram that Travis Scott's wearing this Jordan 1 or this Nike SB Dunk, one aspect of it is like the entire culture, everyone's like, oh my god, those are so nice, oh they look so nice, so let me get them. And then that's one branch of it. Another branch of it is like the reselling aspect of how like the demand instantaneously because of Travis Scott goes up, therefore the demand goes higher and so do the prices. So I think there's a huge impact of like the culture on hypebeast and hypebeast on the culture as well.
But we talked about celebrities. Do you think that these clothing, like this clothing and these shoes, would have reached that same popularity if you didn't have these celebrities wearing them?
Absolutely not. There's certain companies like apparel wise, like V-Lone gets not only worn by every single celebrity and influencer, they also get mentioned in rap songs or headlines on like hypebeast articles. So I think, to answer your question, if it wasn't for these celebrities wearing them, making the music about them, the hype would not be the same, in my opinion.
So in your experience, what would you say is like the primary driver of the value of the shoes? Is it the popularity from celebrities? Is it just the culture around it? Is it just how the shoes look? What would you say is like the driving factor for the value of these shoes?
Different shoes, I feel like, are driven for different reasons. Like, for example, Jordan 1s that are just super common. Everyone wears a Jordan 1. If you're into sneakers, of course, is that if it looks nice, then if the demand is there, then it's instantaneously nicer to the community. And that gets backed up by, like you said, celebrities or just the common public. But another aspect that drives shoes is a lot of shoes get re-released. So for example, if there's a Jordan 11 that released back in 2013, over the course of 7 years, when they re-release in 2020, like, there's less of the shoes and more demand for the shoes. So when they re-release, the demand is still there, essentially. So demand varies, but certain shoes, like these Air Maxes sitting on top of me, they're just regular releases. So there's not much of a demand to it. So there's not much of a resale to it.
So when we talk about demand and almost the rarity of shoes, we very prevalently see that obviously shoes that are more rare have a higher demand and therefore a higher price you can pay for them. How does this impact you in the retail business, and how are you and many of the other big retailers able to get your hands on such a large amount of these rare and expensive shoes at very earlier than many of the other people?
Essentially, there's just when you're a reseller or a store owner, the only difference between you and a common individual that I've seen in my years as a reseller is like your knowledge, how much you're informed. The reason that like resell and has changed over the years is like it's become a lot more accessible for the common public to get certain shoes. However, the way that people I can get a few pairs of really of like new hype shoes for you on release day before release day. So to answer your question, how we do it is you just got to stay connected. That's how you accumulate shoes. Not every whenever you see a reseller or a store flexing with like 100 pairs of one shoe, 9 times out of 10, they're not paid for retail. They'll buy the shoe from someone else for a resale price. And then they'll pay whatever they can pay, and then they'll mark it up and sell it as a store. But to answer your question, like these Travis Scott Air Forces, khaki jacket. These are my personal pairs. Wear your shoes. It's only a $160 shoe. It's an exquisite shoe. Like, you can obviously see that it's not like a normal shoe you can just walk into Foot Locker and get. But the difference between me and the common individual who can get them is the fact that I knew how to get them. Common individual just relies on one source, the Nike sneakers app, more often than not. Whereas I'm a little bit more informed of who to get it from or where to get it from.
So you just showed us one of, you know, Travis Scott's like associated shoes. Do other celebrities kind of have that connection to different brands and different like types of shoes?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like Travis Scott more often than not will not wear a Adidas Yeezy. He doesn't represent Adidas. He's dealing with Nike. That's why all his shoes will always have a Nike check on them. Jordan 1s, Air Forces, Jordan 4s. So he's with the Nike brand, who's also associated with the Jordan brand. Contrary to that, Kanye West, we all know he has the Yeezys. So he reps Adidas 24/7. Rarely you will see him wear something else. Like, I remember a couple months back, like peak Corona, Kanye West posted a picture on Twitter of like a pair of Jordan 1s he was wearing, the court purple Jordan 1s. And he posted a picture on Twitter, and it might not have gone viral, like as far as like Instagram and stuff, but in like the sneaker community, like it became a big thing. Like, no way, like Kanye just wore this. But in the resale community, the thinking was like, does this automatically like appreciate the value of it or not? So
you just spoke about networking in the shoe game, and along with that, many other business industries. Networking is a very important factor, especially for a retailer who's not almost professionally credentialed, but more on retailers who work with individuals when you're selling shoes. Can you take us through one of your like funny or good experiences or stories reselling shoes or networking with a fellow retailer?
I think it's interesting to see how I mean, I associate myself with a lot of store employees. That's how I accumulate a lot, like a lot of Jordan 1s, Jordan mids. I sell a lot of those lately. So if you want to bring up like a funny moment, it's like, it's interesting because it actually happened today. I was at Sawgrass Mall to pick up some shoes because my boy who works at Foot Locker there was like, yo, these shoes just came in. It was a shipment. We restocked. Come through as soon as you can. So I was like, okay, bro, let's go. So I headed there. I went with my dad. We got inside the store. And he's like, I shook his hand. I was like, yo, what's up? He's like, all right, I got you. How many do you want? I was like, I'll take 5. My dad will take 5, which is the maximum pairs you can take. He goes in the back. And then we're standing in line, essentially. And then there's right. some, like, there's some people behind us that just came in. And they were like, they were looking for the shoe that I was getting. And then, so she was like, do they have your size? And she was like, no, they just told me some reseller just took all of them. So I like left the store with like 10 pairs of these Jordan 1 mids. And when I saw them, they didn't have any. So I was like, damn, that kind of sucks. But that was another funny moment that I had witnessed of like the hatred of like the common public to resellers.
If he found out that you were the one who like bought all those, would it be heated or is it more of a calm community in the
It's both, bro. It's both. I've traveled to different cities and living in South Florida, the sneaker game's not like insane. But if you go to like Chicago, New York, LA, and you mess with someone's shoes, like if they visually see you taking their shoe that like they should have,
it's over.
It's over. Yeah, it's over.
I'm sure the same goes for like if you step on someone's shoes by accident, especially if they're 100%. Really big.
I'll personally get pissed, but like I won't get mad at you. But yeah, some people get ticked off.
So I wanted to ask, you talked a little bit about the profitability of the shoe market. And we talked in the episode about how companies like Supreme have really good margins where they spend very little to make a lot. So if you're okay with like disclosing this kind of information, what do your margins look like on average? What kind of profitability do you see in the shoe game?
The shoe game has evolutionized. Like before, I used to sell a lot more Jordan 1s, a lot more Yeezys, where the retail markup for the Jordan 1s was $170 plus tax, so like $183. Yeezys were $220 retail plus tax, so $233. I would, if on a good day, if I would get like 10, 15 Yeezys for retail, I would make like $150 on each. And then that would just be in one weekend for me. A Jordan 1, it depends. Certain times, like I'll get like 10, 15 pairs and I'll, like I said, the retail would be $183. And then I would sell them for $250. So it's like $70 each, $67 each. Sometimes if like the Jordan 1 mochas, like I sold them like between $350 to $400 each. So it varies to answer your question of profitability. However, like I said, it evolutionized. Today I sell a lot more Jordan 1 mids, Jordan 1 Yeezy, Jordan 1 mids, Jordan 1 lows, simply because the retail markup is a lot less. They range from like $70 to $110. And then the flipping aspect of it is I can sell them between $150 all the way up to like $250 per each. So then I'll spend less, make more, and multiply.
So would you recommend that, you know, other people get into the like shoe business of reselling shoes? Because it clearly is something profitable, but is it something that's, you know, easy and accessible for a lot of people?
I'm not gonna say absolutely not. If you were to ask me what I suggested to someone, it's a great side hustle. You can very, I have friends in high school who are like now like a freshman in college and they're just doing shoes as a side hustle now. It doesn't take a lot out of you to just get a hold of some shoes and then sell them to A, StockX, B, GOAT, 3, a local store, because now they're everywhere. Any hype store, you can find them in any mall, or 4, reseller. So there's tons of profit. I mean, I'm a reseller, so like I'll sell hundreds of shoes, so I get the profit. But to advise it to someone else, I would be like 100%. It's funny because I talk to my uncles about reselling too, and they talk about stocks sometimes, so we compare them. And then I, like a few weeks ago, I had sent like a screenshot of an Apple stock, how it raised in like 365 days, probably like $70 to $100. Whereas just like trying to keep this example short and sweet, like a Jordan 1, had you just purchased it for $183 and held it for 1 year, just because there's so many less pairs of those in 1 year, it's gone up $200, $250, maybe $300. So even if you're not reselling, you could just purchase a shoe, keep it in your garage. 1 year later, it's appreciated like 200%. You're like, wow, shout out to a shoe.
Being such a large scaler reseller as you are, and as you've just explained, I'm sure the credibility when you're selling shoes is definitely there, but a whole giant aspect of reselling, whether it be in hypebeast culture or any other business industry, is media marketing and how you brand yourself on social media. Can you go through your process and how you better effectively sell your shoes through the use of Instagram or Twitter or any other social media platforms?
Personally speaking, from the time that I got into like sneaker reselling, which wasn't like, I haven't been reselling for like 10 years. I've only been reselling for like 4 or 5 years. When I got into it, it was either you were on Twitter, which at that time I wasn't super active on in regard to sneakers, whereas Instagram, it just felt so accessible. So I used Instagram. Instagram 100% takes you to another level as far as reselling. I also sold on OfferUp. It might not be a social media, but that was a great outlet to like meet new people locally to sell and buy shoes. Right now, I don't suggest it to people because people love to sell fakes on that. However, but yeah, that's another outlet. Today, I have a lot of friends who are reselling, but like are super famous on TikTok because of just how many like sneakers they accumulate. Like if you just post a nice video of it and it goes viral, next thing you know, you're attracting new people through TikTok to your business.
The whole nother scope of people you can attract to your business. Yeah. We spoke about this earlier on the episode, or earlier before we began the filming on the episode, where TikTok is a very big platform to gauge new interest, being as it's you people who just don't follow you also see your content and how big that can expand you in the business realm.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think all you got to do is just get on the For You page, and next thing you know, you have hundreds of thousands of people just following you now.
And that's our quick shout to our TikTok episode. If you'd like to go back and watch that one, it needs more views, if I'm being completely honest.
So now, I wanted to ask about you made the comparison of shoe reselling and stocks, and in the episode recording we also made a similar comparison where we see shoes being treated as like an investment, as like an asset that people are investing in and then hoping for capitalization, almost like a stock would. So do you think, you know, like comparing like shoe resales to the stock market, do you think that's a valid comparison in your eyes?
It's an absolutely valid comparison. I'm sorry, I made that example with my uncles of how I compare an Apple stock to a shoe, but I absolutely agree with that statement that you could literally look at a shoe as an asset, whether it's Travis Scott related, whether it's Kobe related, or if it's just a general release, it's a shoe's going to appreciate. And every day, I mean, almost every day, like, there's new, like, people joining Robinhood. Robinhood's super accessible for young people to just buy a stock. Whereas for shoes, you have an app called GOAT. You also have an app called StockX, where StockX literally shows you a graph of how the price of the shoe has changed. And sometimes it appreciates, sometimes, of course, it depreciates. But yeah, it could definitely be looked at as a stock.
So you talked about, you know, when it came to OfferUp, you know, the issue with fake shoes. As a shoe seller, how often does like the issue of fake shoes come up? Like, is it really a big deal nowadays?
Oh, it's a super big deal. I've been reselling for a few years, so I've bought tons of fakes on accident, of course. You'd be surprised. I've bought shoes, like $1,100 shoes from a store before, a local store, and they were fake. I bought it from multiple stores. I even bought just a simple Yeezy 350 once from a store, and I sold it on the app Goat. Actually, I sold it to a friend. He sold it to Goat. Goat told him it was fake. So I was like, such a huge chain of events to get the shoe back to the original person. But yeah, fakes are out there. You can go on dhgate.com and buy like a one-of-one replica of any shoe, and there's your fakes.
So I kind of want to lead us into a little bit of a game now. As we can see, you've got a lot of shoes in the background, and you've picked out a couple of shoes, you know, to show us so we can kind of guess the price. So what I want to do now is you're going to show us a shoe, we're going to guess the price, and we'll see who's the closest.
Today, our first shoe that we'll be showing to you guys today. I'm sorry for the lighting.
That thing is colorful, dude.
Actually a pair of Crocs, surprisingly. It's a whole collaboration that Crocs had with two different companies. They're actually called the Chinatown Market Grateful Dead Crocs. They released just a few months ago. Retail value is $70. So let's guess these resale prices.
Everyone go first?
Yeah.
What would you pay for some Crocs?
They're very colorful. They're very colorful, and it's
you can see Evan wearing them.
It's like a no, but so they're very colorful, and they're like a limited time collaboration. So I'm gonna put it in the realm of like $150, like 150. So that's my guess.
Jaden, you want to go one under or one over?
I'm gonna go one over. I'm gonna say 151.
I'm gonna say 149. We're gonna try and get Evan wrong.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna give it to you. I'm gonna give it to you, Evan. I'm gonna say $150 is a resale price, please.
He had a $1 scope and he got it right.
Yeah. This is one of these shoes that vary in like sizes. Like smaller sizes go for like $80, but bigger sizes go for like $180. So it averages out. Like I'll sell them for $150. Yeah, $150, bro.
Okay.
Does that happen with many other shoes as well, where different sizes are worth more and less?
Sizes matter so much with sneakers.
What's an optimal size for like the most profit?
For most profit, when it comes to Yeezys, it's gonna be sizes 4 to 7.5. We call them the base sizes for the base, because they're just smaller and there's less pairs made of them. For Jordan 1s, it'll be sizes in men, sizes 8 to 9.5 are always the ones that go for the most resale.
When you sell sizes, are you primarily selling, you know, like 8, 9, 10s, or do you have a lot of like, you know, I guess young people buying, you know, the 4s to 6s of the world?
Oh, it's really interesting that you bring up that question, because I have toddler shoes, a size 6C, okay, Jordan 1 tie-dyes.
How much are those
so,
for?
So tiny.
Retail, I probably paid like $60 for these. When I go to sell them, I'll probably sell them for like $120 to $140. So like, I'll double my money.
Crazy.
But my shoe sizes go up to size 15. I have every shoe size.
See, now I'm wondering who's buying like designer shoes for their toddlers.
I thought you were gonna say size 15. I was about to make a joke.
No, like the size 6 like child. Who's buying those like super expensive designer shoes for their
little kids? You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised, man. I have these shoes. They're called Tom Sachs Monsard. Only 4,000 of these that were ever made.
Oh my god,
man. It's a size 7C, and it drives resale crazy just because of that.
See, because when I was a kid, I wore light up Skechers. And I think, I mean, the majority can't hear.
How much do those go for? Light up Skechers.
I wore those too, man. So like, yeah. To answer your question, who like gets those for those kids? A lot of people. Like, a lot of people for some odd reason they care about the kids' shoes. But
you're like in a large scale reseller in the South Florida area. Do you often sell to like influencers or artists or infamous podcast interviewer or hosts?
I've sold to like college football players, but like I haven't reached out to like a celebrity or anyone. I've sent shoes to like Noah Beck once, but like I wasn't the one who got accredited for it. It was my friend who works for a management team who got paid to get Noah Beckham shoes. So he paid me. Management team paid him. He paid me, and I sent Noah Beckham shoes essentially. But yeah, I don't sell to influencers, but I know I have friends who do, and shoutouts are huge. Our second shoe today is the Kobe 6 Pro Tro. Grinches. These released right before Christmas time. RIP Kobe. The retail for this shoe was $180 plus tax. Yeah.
No more games. I'm telling you, that shoe, you said $180. I'm thinking you're selling that for about $280.
What do you guys think?
I'm thinking Grinch and Christmas, so I'm assuming it was like a limited drop. I could be wrong, but since after tragedy with Kobe, I'm sure all his shoes appreciated in value a bit, I'm gonna say $310.
Yeah, well, I feel like those smell like Sprite. So, and like, you know, I'm gonna go like somewhere in between Jade and Armand. I'm gonna say $300 flat.
I'll sell this for at least $400.
Oh, wow. Props to you for that.
Yeah. That was the only pair that I got. I only got one pair for retail. It was super hard to get them. It was also like Christmas Eve or something like that, so I didn't go out that way to get them. But yeah, if you get a hold of a few pairs for retail, actually it'll come up. I do know people who won't resell a Kobe shoe because, like Armand, you stated earlier, like because Kobe did pass away, a lot of his shoes are really sought after now. So that
jerseys too.
And sports cards too.
Yeah.
Shoe number three.
Let's go for it.
This one's a little interesting one. The two shoes are like different colors. These are the Nike Air Force One Low, South Korea.
I feel like
you know
Jaden like those.
Retail for these was $130. Again, it's the Nike Air Force One, South Korea, not North. So,
were they made in South Korea?
No. I'm sure most Nike shoes are just made in China. I could be wrong. A lot of things are made.
I can go first with this one. I think.
Wait, hold on. I want to know like what's the backstory? Why they called South Korea? Is it like a?
To be honest, like, I know a lot of the backstories of my shoes, but these I just got, and I don't think I know about them. There's like a little symbol on the tongue. I feel like that symbol symbolizes something in regard to South Korea. But yeah, that's just what they call them.
So I'm going to be a little big brain here, all right? So you say you just recently got them, meaning they likely haven't appreciated in value as much yet, right? Right? Uh-huh. I'm going to go... 160.
Okay. Wait. What's
retail?
Yeah. What's retail?
Retail was 130. I actually found them in an outlet, so I didn't pay 130 for them. I got them for less. But that's just the retail price of the box.
Probably. I'm thinking 210 here. Cause I don't know
what you said.
160. I'm gonna go 161.
I'm gonna say 190. I'm gonna go in between again.
Oh my god.
I'll probably sell this shoe for like 180 to 200 at least. To be honest, I paid like $80 for these. But this is a shoe that I'm not even like super pressed to sell. Just because from like a resale perspective, like it just mentioned South Korea, there's a flag on the shoe. If I don't sell this within the next 365 days, I'm sure like the resale will like double, to be honest.
So I, you know, about those, I think Do people buy, like, is there added value, like, if somebody really likes the aesthetic of a shoe? Like, even if the, like, price is going to be, like, $180 you'll sell it for, are you going to have, like, people pay more, like, just because they like the shoe?
Yeah, because they relate to it, absolutely. A Kobe fan will always pay more for a pair of Kobes than someone who's not a Kobe fan. There's a pair of shoes that just came out within like the last month or two called the J Balvin Jordan 1s. They're super colorful. It was the first ever like collaboration with Jordan Brand and a Latin artist. So I can assure you, I haven't owned one because I just haven't purchased one, but I can assure you that someone who's out of like a Latin ethnicity will absolutely like be willing to pay the price for it versus someone who won't. Because so, they relate to it, sorry.
So like, on that note, do people come to you with prices or do you have like a flat rate and just adjust it from like talking to them? Like how does that work exactly?
The resale price gets determined by a few factors. There's apps that like I mentioned Robinhood, I'm okay, that's not a good comparison. I can just say like StockX and Go. There's ultimately like there's listings and there's people buying them. So eventually like if there's less pairs, there's less listings and those people have the power to raise the prices. And also there's a lot of listings, then eventually if it's a nice looking shoe, then every pair will get bought. As it gets bought, the prices go up. Next shoe is a pair of Nike SB Dunks. Been a huge craze for Dunks lately. Shout out to Travis Scott for that. The evolution that is the culture. But as you can see, it's like a little furry. I wish I could show you guys, but it's like actual fur on the shoe.
The suede?
I would not say it's suede. I'm not sure what it is. It's like actual fur, like that you would have on a rug. On a shoe, essentially. But yeah, they're called Nike SB Dunks, Metacom Air Bricks.
Are these shoes that, you know, you wear because they look good, or, like, are these, like, shoes that you would, like, you know, basketball shoes, play basketball with?
Kobe, a lot of people are actually gonna play basketball in them, and I'll believe them. A shoe like this, a lot of people will, like, buy or, like, keep, like, hold on to it as an investment, and a percentage of those will also wear them.
So
from what I'm...
My first thought when trying to guess the resale price, you said they're the Metacom?
Yes.
Nike SB, does that have any relation to the Indian tribal leader Metacom who we learned about in AP US history? Because if so, I think those prices are big.
I wish I could say yes to that, but I don't believe so, bro.
What's the retail?
Yeah, we also asked, what's the retail?
Retail on these is $100. Most Dunks retail for like $100 or less. They're different.
I'm gonna go with 190. And the fur is a real sell.
Evan, I'm not going second here.
Okay, fine. I'm gonna say, I feel like these shoes with the fur would not be good in the rain. So I'm gonna say 170.
I was gonna say 170. Yeah, like, okay, I think these are good shoes, right? But just looking at, you know, how much, like, profit we're making from the other examples, I think it's somewhere, like, the either between 160, 180-ish. But I'm going to say 160.
I'll sell these for at least $300.
I was close. I was
people really want the fur for that much?
There's actually a tag on the bottom for $450.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
From a store. So that's what a store was selling for. So earlier how I mentioned like a store will buy from me and then mark up their prices, then that's a prime example right there.
This is, you know what it is? It's the prices. At symbol.
It is the at symbol. The little things on shoes always matter. It's always little things.
Thank you. I know those. I tried buying them for a brief period of time.
These are one of my favorites, if not my favorite shoe from my collection. Retail price was $180.
So I know those are significantly more. I know those are significantly more expensive than the retail price.
Thank you for the
hint. I'm gonna let them two go first because I think I know it.
There are Nike Air Force One, like the South Koreas. They're just an Air Force One.
$480. I don't know what's about the shoe, but it's a nice looking shoe, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Given what Armand said, and given how popular Travis Scott is, especially like what we've seen with like the McDonald's thing,
that was huge.
That was just McDonald's. I'm gonna go a little bit high here. I'm gonna say like $800.
So, I was trying to finesse my way to get them for $350, but that did not work out. I'm gonna go $450.
Retail was $160. They go for about $550 to $600.
Wow.
Yeah. This is just one of his collaborations.
Do you think that one's so expensive because like it's just a Travis Scott shoe or?
100%. It's Travis Scott, but it's also a little thing. It's like the detail in the shoe. Like this is like the first Air Force One that like a lot of people have seen. Where there's like a whole zipper on the top that can be removed. So it's like the uniqueness of the shoe. Cactus Jack is his record label, his company, also like Cactus Jack, like the merch. That's like embedded like in the shoe. He represents Houston, H-Town. I think this little symbol right here has something to do with H-Town. It comes off as well. But yeah, I'm not trying to go too deep into the shoe, but it's the uniqueness of the shoe and Travis Scott, 100%. Like if Cactus Jack wasn't on it and it wasn't Cactus Jack related, it 100% would not go for $600.
Yeah, I was gonna say the zipper on the shoe. I've never seen that before. Like, I've never seen a shoe with a zipper on it. It looks like a hoodie almost.
Yeah, and it could literally you could like take it off too. So it's like you can make it however you want it to make it.
How do you wear yours?
I keep the zipper on it. A lot of my friends take the zippers off because then like kind of hide it, but like it looks really nice without the zipper too. I like the zipper because it's super, super unique. So like I'll just zip it up like to the bottom and just leave it open.
But, yeah, interesting. Do you wear a lot of your shoes or like is it, you know, we're here for the profit?
No. I like sneakers a lot. I'll keep a handful. That's just one of my personals. I don't have a huge personal collection. Mine is only like 30 to 35 shoes. But like
I own four.
Yeah.
I have one. I have one purchase that is
what? What? I could never. When I travel, like even if I go to Orlando for a weekend, I'll wear one pair and then I'll bring some slides. And I'll also bring like an extra pair or two just for the week, just for any scenario, you know.
They have to match the fit, right?
You gotta have the right sneakers and you have to match the fit, bro.
Of course.
Yeah. But yeah, that's only like you guys don't have, I only have like I said, like 30, 35. There's people out there with like $1 million collection actually. So for our last shoe today,
it's in a box.
I mean, all shoes are in a box, but it's in a big box.
It's a big box, yeah.
Kobe Retro Undefeated Pack.
Yeah. It looks like a PS5 on the side.
It does, right? Yeah. So this is a 9.5. The retail price on this was $390. It is a Kobe shoe. There's two shoes in there, actually.
You want to guess for what he'd sell both of them for? Just up the antics a little bit.
Are they together or are they like a collection or how? What?
They come together.
Okay.
I can sell them individually. Most people will break. If I sell them individually, I'll sell them for more. But as a pack, okay. So yeah, this is.
So we'll guess the pack. We'll guess the pack.
Yeah.
This is the Kobe pack. Oh wow. There's two pairs of Kobe.
Look nice. Those actually do look nice.
Super fire. They both resemble something.
Evan, I found your second pair of shoes.
So yeah, this pack retails $390. Yeah, let's guess these resale prices. It is a Undefeated is like a hypebeast company, and of course it's a Kobe. So.
All right, you said $390 for the two of them.
$390 is the retail plus.
You will sell those shoes for $900. Evan, the choice is yours.
So that, I mean, so now we know why the box is so big, because there's two pairs of shoes in there. So this is obviously, like, this is like the most expensive shoe you're showing us today, just like based on like retail alone. I'm gonna go a bit more than Jaden. I'm gonna say 1,000, like the flat 1K.
So I'm looking at them, and again, the value in Kobe shoes have appreciated a lot, not for the right reasons. Rest in peace to the GOAT. But those shoes look, they're heat, man. I'm gonna go with 2,000.
Oh my god.
They will go for 2,000 one day, I guarantee you that. Right now the market's really down, but I'll tell you, I'll sell this shoe for at least $1,000.
Oh wow.
So I was wrong.
I was right.
I've had more expensive sneakers. I just don't know. A lot of them, I keep them on consignment, meaning like they're at a store to be sold, because it's harder to just sell it over here. But like I've sold shoes like $2,000-$3,000, which isn't much. There's like tons of more expensive sneakers than you can.
Like the Dior ones.
Like the Dior ones, Off-White Chicago ones.
Red Octobers.
Yeah, Red Octobers, 10K at least.
Oh my god.
So, Red Octobers.
Nike Air Yeezy, Red Octobers. And yeah, it's a Nike Yeezy, because Kanye used to wear Nike.
So that's rare, rare.
Rare, rare. All those Nike Air Yeezys are...
Red October shoes. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm looking at these right now. Yeah, 10,000.
Didn't like
11,
LeBron
000.
Wear them once in a game.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron wore them in a game. I think PJ Tucker wore them in a game.
Someone wore them in a game.
Grady and ad revenue one day. All right. So I have one more question for you. So you told us that, you know, you don't really sell a lot of shoes to, you know, the influencers and celebrities. You know, people who do. But if you could sell a shoe to any influencer, any celebrity, who would that be?
Who would it be?
Yeah.
Who would I want to serve? I'm a big Travis Scott fan. I would love to, but like he has every single sneaker in the world. But if it wasn't for Travis Scott, I would love to sell some sneakers to Lil Baby. 4PF, bro. I love Lil Baby. So like, yeah, to answer your question, I would sell some shoes to Lil Baby.
And then I have one last question. It's a bit more obscure. I'm sure you've seen the almost historical rise of like Pokemon cards, how the resale value of Pokemon cards, with how we've seen like popular like streamers on like Twitch and YouTube have like drastically increased the amount of resale for Pokemon cards, as well as just like, the value of them and just how popular they are. So do you think, like, how do you think shoes compare to other like other collectibles, like asset wise, you know, comparing that to like Pokemon cards or even like other like Yu-Gi-Oh cards or baseball cards, etc.?
Yeah, even baseball or sports cards. I think you could all look at them as like assets. Hitting, like I told you, if you get a shoe for $180, like it's gonna appreciate. Same thing with like Pokemon cards. You get like the right pack and you pull a Charizard, and next thing you know, whether it's like
Big Bang,
whatever grade it is, it's like at least 1K, you know, it's like $50. So yeah, it's like if you hit the right one, if you play your cards right, then you'll come up heavy. So yeah, I think Pokemon cards can be like somewhat related to shoes. If you get the right one, then like a Dior one. I had two friends who hit Dior ones for retail. which was $2,000. So imagine turning that shoe from $2,000 to like up to $15,000. That's crazy to me. But like, yeah, you can compare them both. Like, there's Charizards that go for like what, $100,000, $200,000,
even more.
Yeah, even more. Yeah, it only appreciates. So, to like, for like, from a business aspect, like, why would you not put it into something, whether it's a stock or a shoe or a Pokemon card?
So that was the episode. Thank you so much, Ishan, for coming on and showing us about your shoe collection and improving our mindset about the scope of how shoes impact hypebeast culture and teens in general. Is there any final thoughts you'd like to say to the Gradient Podcast viewers?
Go watch every single last podcast. Keep watching every podcast from here on out. I love this, bro. This was great. I appreciate you guys so much. I can't wait to hear every single podcast that you guys create from here on out. You guys are good people. I had fun. Thank you.
You want to plug your
if someone wants to check you out, where can they find you?
You can find me on eBay at 944.supreme. I sell a lot on eBay, or you can hit me up on Instagram. That's where you can always DM me for any sneakers you need. It's at 954.supreme. Again, I appreciate you guys so much. This was lit.
Once again, we want to give a huge thank you to Ishan for coming on the podcast today and sharing with us his experiences with the shoe game. It was a absolute blast to be able to guess the varying prices of the shoes that he showed us, and we want to once again thank him for coming on the podcast.
Again, if you saw anything you liked, you can check our boy Ishan out. His links will be in the description.
Of course, 2021 is a new year, but the Gradient Podcast still has their old traditions. So for this segment of the Gradient Q&A, we're going to throw it to at Sir TVib on Instagram, who asked us.
He says, what is your favorite thing to talk about on the podcast?
My first thought is, I very much enjoyed talking about the election and politics in that realm. And of course, the sports episode was something that I more than anything enjoyed getting to speak to Keith Sims, the former Pro Bowler of the NFL. It was an absolutely incredible experience, and I urge all of you to go watch that episode.
Yeah, I mean, I won't lie, we've had a lot of fun ones, we've had a lot of good ones. I mean, every episode we do, every topic we do, I always find them entertaining, I always find them interesting, so I can't, you know, I've said this before, but I can't really, you know, pick one. I would say that esports was very fun. I had a lot of fun with the shoe one today, so definitely a lot of fun stuff that we talk about.
Mm-hmm. For me, I think it's pretty clear in my mind. I really enjoyed the esports episode. I've been a longtime follower of esports for, you know, 5+ years. Getting Uber on the podcast was almost a little bit of a vanity project because I'm a big fan of his. Happened for a while, so yeah, I definitely enjoyed recording the esports episode a lot.
Evan's a big, long-time follower of esports, and you should be a big, long-time follower of us and all of our social media. If you want to follow us on YouTube and subscribe, it really does help us out, and it is greatly appreciated. You can check out our Instagram, @GradientPodcast, or our Twitter, @GradientPodcast.
The transition game is strong, indeed. Please like and subscribe, and we'll see you guys soon.
Thanks so much for watching. Game. We'll be right back.